So that's my two cents for today. And we have, you know, some fair amount of time to check it with one another. If anyone has thoughts, questions, feelings, please share. Tom is with us again.
I've always been here. I'm, even though my picture's not here, I'm always with you, Joe. You should know that. Just a reminder to everybody that if you want to raise your hand to go down to the participants, and I'll try to call on you. Also, I just want to thank you, Joe. I have to say, I've known you for many, many years, and you really do always come alive when you talk about the beloved Kala Chakra. and tonight was no different. So, and it touches me also personally. So anybody else, does anybody have any questions or reflections they want to share with everybody? Okay, Justin.
Good evening, Joe.
Good evening, Justin, how are you?
I'm well, how are you?
Good, thanks for asking.
Good. So, yeah, so I would like to hear if you would maybe address how, so it seems as though a lot of ancient traditions, you know, they're sort of in modern times, and I'm not saying this is, I mean, obviously you're giving a very brief overview of Tantra and of Kala Chakra, but there is sort of that, you know, like with the, you know, modern mindfulness movement, you know, it's sort of been, you know, parts have been extracted that seem to be, you know, scientifically proven, or, you know, and there are swaths of, you know, aspects, you know, like, you know, mentor, you know, not worship, but what is the word I'm looking for?
Yoga, yeah.
Conjuring, anyway, but like, so is there, I think the thing about, you know, changing ourselves within, and that becomes an external, you know, change, I think has become a rather, there's a rather passive understanding of that today, where it's sort of just about, you know, I'm just going to change myself, and that's all I'm really kind of, all I need to do, you know. I think there's, is there anything more to it in the Kala Chakra tradition of what those actions might look like to bring about change? Like, it's got to translate somehow. It's not just this sort of passive or magical thinking, you know, that we transform, and then there's these external changes, especially when there are sort of, when there are, you know, there are actually like sort of systems and structures actually rather that need, you know, that are actually rather repressive and oppressive.
Yeah, beautiful. I mean, that's such a, thank you so much, Justin, for that great question. And yeah, that this isn't, there is a tendency in the modern tradition, you know, the modern Western world, I think, to commodify, you know, both mindfulness and other kinds of spiritual practice as kind of like personal consumer goods, you know, well-being, you know, your own self-care thing, your own little massage. And yeah, these traditions are as far from that as possible. I mean, the fundamental aspiration of, you know, certainly the whole Mahayana tradition, that is to say the tradition that that began in the early, around the time of the New Testament, back in India and spread throughout Asia. And that's the tradition on which the tantras are based, is all about how you can transform the environment you live in. And it's not because, it's not simply because you want to be a better person or you want to live in a better neighborhood, sort of, or a better world, because it's not about, you know, self-seeking, ultimately. Really, it's about, based on the reality of understanding we're all in this together, and then if we're going to become more open, caring, sensitive people, then we're going to become infinitely more tied into and aware of the suffering that goes on around us, including the social the oppressive social systems, which did not, we didn't invent, I mean, they're not new to the modern West by any means. Like, the caste system was a very powerful oppressive and still remains a very powerful oppressive social system that the Buddha very actively disrupted and you know, transformed actually in many ways, very intentionally. So there's a social theory aspect to all of this, of transforming not just oneself, but through one's own transformation, sparking a transformation in community, and in this case, contemplative science community. So the idea here is that through educating people about our own health, well-being, and nature, and then, you know, really working to educating people about the ways in which we, you know, have been run by violence, and violence is built into our cultures, our societies, and our nervous systems, and that all that has to be dismantled. And it's not just on an individual level. It doesn't just, that's not enough. There's also collective karma. And the need for us to transform the way we envision our community, the way we relate to others, and the way we reach out to others and empower or support or understand. So transforming the world is the primary purpose of this practice, actually. It's just that we use our own minds and bodies as an instrument of compassion, basically. And the motivation here is, you know, as the Dalai Lama likes to say, if you want to be happy yourself, practice compassion. If you want other people to be happy, practice compassion. And that's not just a prayer or an attitude. It also means you start helping and serving and thinking about how you can stop violence. And it's not just all pretty either. A lot of it is fierce and facing and confronting, like our friend, Lama Rod Owens talks in his new book, Love and Rage, talks about the importance of protesting and being indignant about the insanity and the way in which delusion and hate has oppressed so many of us and created so much artificial division and suffering. So there's a very powerful social transformational agenda here. And that should be clear, even in mindfulness, the importance of loving kindness and the importance of love and compassion and benevolence toward others and all that is fundamental. So it is true that the modern commodification of mindfulness and meditation have really stripped the traditions of the traditional three disciplines. If you have meditation without ethics or without wisdom, it's like a bird without wings, and it just won't fly. And that's you know, definitely a critique.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, Justin. Great question.
Ellen, you're on.
Okay. I'm trying to have a more positive attitude. This is harder than I thought it would be. But it's certainly not as bad as the Holocaust. I and friends who were survivors hiding for years in a barn. And they didn't have Zoom either. And what I'm trying to do, I'm talking to my friends about impermanence, because as tough as this is, it's not going to last forever. And I really hope I survive this because in the fall, I want to take an active political role for the party of my choice. I'll give you three guesses. But it's a way of making it's a concrete expression of wanting things to be better and being willing to do something about it.
So getting engaged, I'm not sure I followed exactly, but you're saying that you have the urge to get engaged politically is what you're saying.
Yes, to work actively for the political party of my choice.
Yeah. I mean, again, you know, we all have a sense of that the world needs, you know, to change. And part of the reason why we're in the current divisiveness that we're in is that, you know, there's so much confusion about and fear of change and resistance to change. And the world is changing, whether we like it or not. Then there's the party, there's the sort of conservative, I don't mean that politically, I mean biologically, there's the self-protective instinct that wants to hold on to the familiar and protect myself. And then there's the progressive instinct or the species protective instinct that wants to give myself to others and help work together and share the load and create a better community. And clearly that impulse is the impulse that's gotten us this far overall. Well, we've had lots of self-defeatingness. It seems that humanity has this capacity to be open to change for the better and to really be smart enough to adapt. And one of that really has to do with really using the available, you know, system, using your whatever leverage you have in the current system to move it in the direction that you see and feel as saner, kinder, more compassionate. So I think absolutely that's a powerful way to do it, you know, especially if you have that urge. I mean, I think that there are questions vis-a-vis both the political process and things like climate change and so on, the intractable problems that we face, where a big part of the problem is that change, even change that's wrought by some kind of, you know, either a political process or through some kind of mechanical improvements, doesn't entirely do the trick. I mean, it's better than nothing, but ultimately also we have to be educating people or dialoguing with people to try to understand how we can all see a bigger picture of reality and all be ready for it, all feel ready to embrace the positive change. And so there has to be a culture change. And that's part of, I think, where these traditions are powerful. And there's the convergence of contemplative practice with political activism is going to be really important because it helps, just as, say, nonviolence throughout history has been a very powerful force, the contemplative practice can help insulate people from burning out trying to change out of fear and anger and not protecting their own minds and staying as positive as possible or knowing how to take care of themselves in the process of social action. So it's important that we both get engaged in action, but also we know our own limits and we don't push ourselves violently to act when it actually really, it's just hurting us.
Yes, I just want a better world for everyone.
Yeah. Well, you know, Kalachakra would love you. Yes, that's the idea. In the vision of Kalachakra, for example, because scientific education in the contemplative science becomes spread throughout the world, not only does racial barriers get dissolved and dismantled, you know, every couple of deities in Kalachakra is an interracial couple. They're all different colors, and social political systems get dismantled so that there's no more kingship. There's no more oppressive political governing class in Kalachakra, because everybody is so highly able to regulate themselves, and everybody's aware of that equality. So there's a shift toward radical democracy. So there's this political vision is very much part of this ancient teaching from the 11th century. It's very far out. Are there any other questions? Hi, Susanna. Nice to see you. Anna, how are you? And Maria, you're up very late, Maria. I hope this is not too late for you. She's in Sweden. Are there other questions anyone wants to share? And I think we're maybe running out of time, right? No, we have time. Hi, Mark.
Hold on, Mark. Yes, sir.
Mark.
Were you just waving hello, or did you have a question?
No, I have something to say, not a question.
Okay, please say it, Mark.
No, I start with a feeling of vulnerability and isolation, but I've come to realize that this is a transformative time where usually I think of people and countries as separate from me, but in this moment, I feel the whole world is feeling pain. And that feeling that is a unifying emotion. And it's worldwide. And in a sense, it enables me to perceive a feeling as part of the whole world. So it's not a comfortable feeling in one side, but the other side is very comforting simultaneously. So that's a Kala Chakra feeling. And I have it. And I don't know where it's going to go exactly. It changes as it changes, but I think it's an opening. And this group is part of that for me. I feel connected by being here with you all the same way.
Thank you so much, Mark, for the beautiful words. And you could be, you could be a stand-in for the Dalai Lama right there, because this is his mantra, which is the essence of the Nalanda tradition is the science of understanding the total interdependence of all living beings and of all life and nature. And that's at the foundation of Kala Chakra. And that the mood, the healthy mood, or the most positive and productive way to respond, to cope with that total interdependence, is compassion, is love and compassion, is to really understand that we're all in it together, and to feel it, that is a blessing. So thank you for sharing that, and it is a real opening. And I also like you, I appreciate that you're sharing the vulnerable side as well, because it makes us more, feel the suffering more. But at the same time, if we're feeling it more with care, it actually doesn't in any way, it doesn't detract. It actually lends a deeper meaning and a deeper purpose. And that's what, say, current sort of neuroscience studies of compassion training, which of course didn't need to be proven that it works, but nonetheless, we have these new studies that show that our brains can be connected through reactivity, like social contagion, that is, you're upset, I'm upset, or they can be connected through compassion, and that we can train the capacity to connect with suffering through compassion. It makes us much more resilient, and it taps into our fundamental well-being system. It taps into the internal reward system, that is that sort of what the Kala Chakra is talking about, that sort of bliss network within us that is expressed in the wish to relieve suffering, you know, in the simple wish to sort of face and relieve the suffering. Were there some other questions? Anyone else have reflections or thoughts?
I have Salvador.
Hey, Sal, how are you? Good to see you.
Hey, Joe, good. No, I just wanted to, I was, you know, what you were saying has been helpful. I'm actually up near Woodstock, and on the way up here, you know, I was in a really bad mood because someone cut me off. I was like, you know, these people are aggressive, they're driving so fast, and, you know, without leveraging myself with these interactions with a positive group, you know, you can really get swayed towards like buying into this aggressive behavior, and I just don't want to do it. You know, I know it's wrong, it's bad for my body. So I just wanted to say thank you. This has been helpful to kind of, you know, detoxify myself from some of what's been going on.
Well, thank you. We're glad to see you. It looks like a beautiful place wherever you are, and that you got past the hurt and the frustration of being cut off. I mean, we are all human, and we have this binary nature that I often talk about, where we're sort of on the fence between our survival mode and our thriving. And the reality is that it's really understanding, you know, that this is why we can't, it's not personal. This is why there's so much suffering and evil and craziness and harm and hate in our culture, in our society, because that survival part of our minds that's very me-oriented and very scarcity-oriented and very reactive is very close to our instincts and conditionings. It's right there. At the same time, there's this other side. Like you think about when you see a baby or you see a kitten, somebody's little cat walked over the screen, right? Earlier in the Zoom, your heart melts. So that loving part of us is also right under the surface. And the point is that we're set up by evolution to have negativity bias, which is to lean into the stress. And that's why the only reason from a Kala Chakra point of view that we have the messed up world that we have is because we haven't learned to stop leaning into the stress. And then it drives us crazy. It makes us do crazy things. And that's where the science or spirituality or whatever you want to call it, the practice of reminding ourselves and continually letting go of the negativity bias and keep coming back to and keep investing in and strengthening our relationship with the positive, returning to it and feeding it over and over again. This is what's necessary to counteract the 10 to 100 times bias that we have to stay in that negative mode. This is why it's so much work and why we have to be educated to shift our nervous systems out of that gear and into thriving mode. Otherwise, it's all just talk and it ain't going to happen in a sustainable way. Every person has to learn to change the way they live in their human nervous system. And so... thank you for reminding us that we're all human and that we have those two options in any moment.
well, appreciate it. Thank you, Joe.
We still have a little time before closing meditation. If anybody else wants to share anything, that would be lovely. Kirsten, do you want to share that, or is that a private chat? Timely. do you mind if I share it, Kirsten? Sonia, thank you for that beautiful one. So should we read some of the chats that people are sending out?
Sonia had just reacted, I think, to Mark's, as everybody can read them, actually, she had reacted and said, what a lovely idea to feel integrated with the world through the pain we all feel. That is indeed compassionate. Thank you for that expression of community. So that's directed to Mark. And then also Kirsten just had written a very timely, no pun intended, talk for me. Thank you, everyone, no problem. And Anna is now saying, it seems that we are very much responsible for our own stress. Now, I don't know if you want to react to that also, Joe. That's an interesting, interesting concept.
Well, let's just say that, I mean, it's sort of like we're responsible not in the sense that we're to blame, because it's perfectly natural and it's unavoidable. And especially given, you know, how much suffering all life involves from our being helpless little creatures, and potentially also because of the suffering involved in our social systems that Justin pointed out, the ways in which many people are much more exposed, like people of color or, people with, other gender orientations or people different out-group religious or other orientations, people of different shapes and sizes. I mean, so stress is much worse for some of us, but it is part of all of our lives, and we certainly don't want to blame anybody for feeling stress. At the same time, we're responsible in the sense that ultimately we need to be part of the solution of overcoming it. I mean, compassion works because we also have the capacity to receive help from others, right? So we need to know that until someone else is ready to take on the burden of dealing with their own reactivity to stress, we can be there to help them by modeling and sharing a greater sense of well-being. So that in and of itself can be a help and help somebody be aware of, well, maybe I could deal differently with all the stress I'm under. But ultimately, we all...
I think it feels like it's a fine line, I think, that between blaming the victim and for feeling the stress. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a bit more nuanced than what you were saying.
And this is let me say one more thing, Tom, if that's okay.
Of course.
This is part of the... this is part of the distinctive nature of Buddhist culture, is this sort of radical optimism in our capacity, given the enough education and social support, right? That we have to have Dharma and we have to have Sangha and we have to have role models. But given that, there's this radical fundamental belief that we all could do this. But the fact of the matter is, most of us don't have that. Most of us don't have those positive conditions that are necessary for us to be empowered to take responsibility for our own stress. And so in that sense, we need to really be very compassionate with how hard this is for us as humans, especially given our society and our culture.
And I will try to, just you're speaking about role models, Joe, share with you, Barbara had something we had posted in our Facebook post, that His Holiness, the Dalai Lama, is live streaming in about 4 hours. So if you want to get an incredible teaching, it will be translated in English. But in about 4 hours, just go to dalailama.com. And that's a little bit about 4 hours from now if you're going to be stay up. So that's an opportunity for everybody. Kirsten, this is all coming to, had also just shared, I am currently meditating on the idea of letting go and not being defined by one's past. It is important to remember the cycles and how that can be utilized to help release past trauma. I don't know if you want to reflect upon that, Joe.
It's a beautiful sentiment, because I think part of our evolutionary conservative instincts to cling to the worst do perpetuate how much we... how hard it is at times for us to let go of past suffering or present suffering. And so again, it can be very liberating to learn to go with the flow of change, but even that in and of itself is no mean feat, right? It really does require feeling safe enough to learn how to practice letting go and then understanding the importance of developing that practice and leaning into it to really healing or growing. And again, that's you know, that's all dependent on getting the encouragement and the skills from others or from our society.
And finally, we want to do a closing meditation. Ellen wanted to share, in addition to sharing her cat earlier, she wanted to, she said we can try to revision our future in terms of interbeing rather than separation.
Yeah.
Which I thought was a nice, beautiful thought at the end.
Beautiful. And that's, you know, Thich Nhat Hanh's beautiful term for the Buddhist concept of interdependence, that we all only really live in and through our relationships with others. And all things are like that too, not just us, but nature as well, as a web of relativity. And that's actually, you know, if you want to tune into dalama.com tonight, he'll be talking about the profound wisdom of relativity and emptiness, and how you know, Nagarjuna understood that, and how he himself, he's spent a lot of his life studying this profound topic of wisdom. So shall we maybe close with a brief meditation? I don't see any objections. Okay. If no one else has anything super pressing, then let's do that. Let's first get settled. Again, be feeling supported by wherever you are, by the earth, the ground, and feeling the love that has gone into making your life and nurturing your life, and all the love that's gone into all the living beings, all the mammals, and even the other non-mammals who are nurturing to their young and so on, that's made it possible for us to be at this point where we're beings that are made to connect with others primarily in love and compassion and you know, awe and joy and so on. We're very lucky beings. And try to feel that in your body, that you're maybe hopefully able to tune into well-being as you sit, that it's not too uncomfortable, or that you're able to bear with the discomfort and also notice the well-being. And try to, as you breathe into that, try to feel that you're fueling and feeding the well-being network, right? I had you envision the subtle body, the yogic network, that's part of the esoteric Buddhist tradition as well as the yoga tradition. And you can imagine as you're breathing in that you're sort of feeding the opening of the central channel, which is really akin to sort of getting access to our internal reward system, our internal network of well-being, whatever you want to call it, our core capacity for well-being, joy, love, and care. So that's what we're trying to do, is balance our normal, extremely reactive and oscillating mind and tune into this core of well-being. And as you're sort of breathing, just try to see if you can sense that. Is there a sweetness anywhere in your breath? Can you befriend the core of your being? Even if there's knots and you feel tensions, just try to bear with them and try to tune into where there also may be openings and you know, sweetness or warmth. And as you sort of try to spend a few minutes grounding your attention by focusing on where you most feel your breath, like gathering the busy mind and then all the thoughts that we've shared, gathering the mind into this simple reality of here and now, my breath, my body, and using that then as a support to re-expand, to open the mind again. And so then let's do that. Let's open Let's shine the light of mindful awareness on the mind that's noticing the body. Where is that field of awareness that's paying attention to this all? And can I free that field of awareness or that stream of awareness? Can I free it of all the clutter and all the muck of habit, bias, preconception, you know, judgment, prejudice, etc.? Can I get to a place of really being ready here and now to unlearn everything I think I know and learn all over again how to be human here and now? This is our jewel, the part of our mind that is so capable of adapting in so many different ways. And as we try to lean into that, gather in more and more of our awareness, settle more and more of our awareness, and rest in that space of open mind, that clearing within us, letting all the thoughts and perceptions and emotions sort of roll off us or float by us or drift away, and really going into the still clearing and openness. And then as we sort of immerse ourselves as fully as possible in that field of our potential, perhaps we can begin to recognize that that embryonic mind, the first mind we brought into this life, and the mind that's still doing all of our real deep learning for us, that mind actually really contains our whole universe, right? That's the mind that has learn to understand and perceive what we think we know about ourselves and the world around us. And for the moment, let's try to put all of that aside or let it all go for the moment, like imagining that everything we think we know that is part of us, part of our environment, part of the world at large, the universe at large, imagine it's all just like a film, and it all just dissolves into this pure open field of awareness and possibility, right? And that we're really starting to live our life all over again in this moment. And I asked you to tap into your longing to be healthier, happier, freer, version of yourselves. I'd like you now maybe to, in your mind's eye, envision someone, a mentor, a guide, a friend, a parent, a grandparent, who gives you a spark of the sense of the possibility of a different way of being. Maybe just makes you feel a little different. Maybe makes you feel like more warmly toward yourself or more trusting of your vulnerability or kindness, and think of that mentoring being as sort of like a catalyst for your own transformation. And as you sort of take that mentoring being in and feel like almost like the sun, the warmth, but the bliss, the joy, the sort of greater freedom to bravely be sort of nakedly vulnerable and openly interconnected with all with care and joy, right? Imagine that way of being. That's the Kala Chakra way, which we all have at our heart. We all have that potential. So imagine that being that you've envisioned sort of resonating now. Imagine as you breathe in his or her presence, his or her energy, his or her chemistry and awareness, that it's like it's feeding the spark or the embers of the warm, caring, loving, joyful feelings inside of you. And it's growing and developing through that interaction, through that mutual resonance, that you're growing and developing, sort of melting away any limits and becoming more the kind of emerging as more the, we'll say the awakened version of you, the lighter, more joyful, more blissful version of you, the more caring, connected, and effective version of you, right? And how would that look? Is that version of you that grows out of this present energy of joy and care you see in your mentor, is that version of you in some way like the mentor or in some way very different? Can you feel a sense of twinship or kinship or congeniality or conviviality that maybe we all have this potential? Maybe I didn't know I had this potential to be radiant or to be a catalyst like you. But, you know, as you sort of own that potential, imagine the mentor now melting into your heart as light or warmth or moisture, chemistry, blissful energy. And imagine that it sort of intensifies the inner light or warmth or care, and that so that it shines through your slightly new version of yourself, and that there's a light or a ripple effect as your attention and your actions and your words ripple out to the world around you, to the people immediately around you or the people you connect with, to the people in this community that we're sharing together, to the people in the world around, in your locality. Is there a way in which this new version of you can resonate with, awaken, catalyze the good and the joyful in all beings that's all just right there, and help others find their own power to transform through this clockwork, this transformational clockwork that we're sharing, and to maybe think of even to the ends of the earth, living beings, whatever kind of suffering or disaster or crisis they're in, whether it's health, financial, war, political insanity, to be thinking of this power as having the power to galvanize their cooperation, to really take on all of that, and slowly, transform the planet through this opening of this awareness of our interdependence, and really not forgetting all those who are at work on the front lines. We have the 7 o'clock clap here, and for those that are still working on the front lines. So include them all very much in this ripple effect, and just see what is the world that you might want to see to emerge into as we emerge from this crisis, to really try to see it very clearly and to start getting ready to be engaged in whatever ways you might need to make it happen or be part of it happening. And then, so now feel the rest of the world maybe has picked up on somehow subliminally, aware of you too, aware of the attention that you've been directing, the consideration, the compassion, and is sending back like winks and ripples of mutual validation, solidarity, and that's coming back into your locality through our community, our virtual community, and into your body and into your heart, and further sort of deepens and purifies the wholesome energy of longing that we're tapping to transform, right? That's the clean energy of our transformational clockwork. And so now maybe you can let the world return to its normal appearance, recognizing that this is a vision. Let your space and your body return to their normal appearance, but feel in your heart that there's a real shift, perhaps, and notice how you feel right now. And if you feel a little more engaged, a little more empowered, a little more open to your vulnerability and your interconnection in a caring way. And as you make note of that, you can set an intention. You really want to use this time to use the transformational clockwork of your longing and wise attention awareness, higher awareness, to transform for your benefit and for the benefit of the whole world. And now let's come back again to just the simple reality of your breathing body, and knowing that that's the jewel that allows all this reflection and transformation to happen. So please take good care of that living body as you, and feel the gratitude toward the way in which the earth and all the loving life forms throughout time have supported your body and are supporting your body here and now. Okay, and at your own pace, as I ring the bell, please open your eyes, and maybe Tom can unmute us all so we can all say goodbye.
Yes, and let me first just say thank you, Joe, for a wonderful teaching, and also just on a personal level, I want to thank the wonderful community for the energy, the incredible energy and the teachings that you as a community to bring to me, and I hope to everybody else. I'm going to officially unmute you all so we can all say goodbye.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
Everybody.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Bye.
Bye, everybody.
Thank you.
Bye, Pandadeva Buddha.
Thank you, Joe.
Care, wonderful. Bye. Good to see you.
Thank you, Joe.
Thank you so much.
Be well and be well. Mark,
thanks, John.
Bye, Sandy. Brian. Hi, Kathleen. Hi. Okay.
I see Pablo live. There we go.
Hey, Pablo.
Middle of a tropical storm down here.
Yeah.
Okay, take care.
Take care. Bye now.
Okay.
Bye-bye, Randy. Great to see you.
Thank you all.
Take care. Thanks, everybody.
Jim, be well.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you.